This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Well, you sometimes need to ask the basketball gods to give you something, and they sometimes will deliver it. Yesterday on the show, I said, I love this series if we can just get a competitive game. Right? The first three games of this NBA Finals have gone in one direction, right? One team dominating the game and kind of pulling away and staying on top and pushing the other team back whenever they made a run. That's what Phoenix did in the first two games of this series. That's what Milwaukee did in Game 3, winning by 20 points. And I said, while we could have a 2-2 series, we could have four games in which there was just one team that just kind of controlled the whole game. Give me something that's competitive, and I got it last night. It wasn't the prettiest game. There were a lot of turnovers, and Milwaukee didn't even shoot all that well. But you know what? In the end, that was an exciting fourth quarter. And we're going to get to all of the details coming up, including some controversy, an amazing block, a guy who really stepped up in his performance, and another guy that took a backward trend after having such an amazing part of the first part of the series and even amazing run of the playoffs. We'll get to all of that coming up on the show today. We'll also take a look at the ongoing British Open, or the Open Championship, however you want to call it, that is going on right now at Royal St. George's. We'll talk a little NFL later on in the show today with Mike Tannier, as camp is getting ready to start in just less than 2 weeks. Well, actually less than, I think in about a week or so, there's going to be a couple of teams that will be reporting, but then everybody else is checking in on the 28th. But we got some storylines that we want to get to on the show. We're going to spend a lot of time, though, on the NBA Finals Game 4 last night, as Milwaukee has now evened up this series at two games apiece, and they did so by outscoring Phoenix by 12 points in the fourth quarter. It was a relatively close game. I mean, Phoenix would go out to like a 7-point lead. Milwaukee would cut it down. Then Milwaukee would take the lead and Phoenix would get it back. And it kind of went back and forth. But for the most part, it was pretty close. There wasn't a 20-point gap at halftime. It was actually tied at halftime. But what happened in the fourth quarter has made everybody wonder if there has been a huge momentum shift. Momentum shifts are always going to occur after wins, but is it enough to then say, wait a minute, now the real control belongs to Milwaukee? We'll talk about that coming up as we continue on Wake Up Call. At Tony D Radio on Twitter, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, coming up, how did Milwaukee pull it off in the fourth, and what everybody was afraid of that could have happened next.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Hey, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. It is a Throwback Thursday today, and we are going back to the great year of 1988. Because on this date, the Christmas movie event of the season was released in Bruce Willis's epic Die Hard.
Christmas in July.
Christmas in July. Alan Rickman also starring in that movie, which is kind of still holds up today, don't you think?
Oh, it definitely does.
From an 80s movie's perspective. And also set the Christmas movie debate on fire. This is one of those passionate ones, too. Like, if you go on Twitter or Facebook and you kind of mention it, people get really fired up about it.
If you're in a bar, you could end up in fisticuffs.
That's true. It's really kind of intense. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Every year we talk about this.
But one thing can all agree on, first time we really got to see what elevator shafts look like, right?
That's true. That's right. Good point. But was this the movie that made Bruce Willis a star? Was he in a movie before that? And then he got this because he was already a star. He was on Moonlighting, but that was TV.
I think this was the movie that made him a star.
I think it was too.
Or because
he was really popular in Moonlighting with Sybil Shepherd. He was funny, but he was kind of, you know, he's a good looking guy in Hollywood. You know, make his mark. He's in TV, and I think this was the movie that sort of made him a blockbuster star,
or at least made him an action hero.
Right, made him an action hero, right. So, and, you know, he raised, John McClane raised two nice kids. One worked for the government, and the other one was kind of a sassy girl that, you know, didn't, you know.
You're talking about the other Die Hard movies, which I guess those might be debatable.
Yeah, those kind of fell off the radar a little bit. The second one wasn't bad.
No, the second one was fun.
He was on the plane.
Yeah.
And there was the plane, and you know, he was at the airport.
Running around all throughout the airport.
And John Amos was in it.
Kind of got the knowledge of, oh, man, there's tunnels all throughout the airport, too.
That's right, yeah.
Underneath.
And then Die Hard 3, was that the one with Samuel L. Jackson? Because that wasn't bad either.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Live Free and Die Hard, or?
Yeah, Jeremy Irons played the villain, and they were stealing the gold.
Yes,
he was making him chase him all around New York, giving him clues.
He was Han's brother, right? Or
Han's brother, yeah. And he was just basically a thief, but he was trying to be a bigger, almost like a bigger terrorist. But all he was just a guy trying to steal money, trying to steal gold. So anyway, on this date, Die Hard was released in 1988. Yeah. You know what I was thinking about, and I don't want to get all old school. But do you remember when you were a kid and you'd get the newspaper and you would open up to the movie section and there was all of these ads, and it was almost like a full page. It was all the theaters in your area and what they were showing, and some would be like, if Indiana Jones, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, or Indiana Jones was in, or Star Wars, or whatever, it was like a big ad that would show it, and they would show all the show times on it. That's how you did it. You would open up the paper and you'd be like, what movie do we want to see? And you see then they had movie phone later on, of course. Now it's all apps and things like that. But I can remember seeing like huge ads for these kind of movies, like Die Hard and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Temple of Doom and Return of the Jedi and all these kind of Gremlins and all E.T. and all of these were in the paper.
Then the full page came out when it was the premiere.
Yeah, that's right.
Like opening now, opening today.
You got to get it. You got to go see right now. But remember, Superman, all that.
And in some newspapers, you almost had like an entire section, like a little insert that was all cinema. Or maybe that was just Los Angeles.
A lot of places. Well, the Concord Monitor, where I grew up, wasn't as big a deal. But it still had a huge, you know, that was a major advertising source, was these movie theaters putting out these big sort of, hey, this is what you want to see. Come to the 10 theater complex or whatever, and these are the movies that are there. So
I even feel like movie posters are gone now.
Movie posters are gone. Yeah, I got a couple in my my bonus room that you can order them online. But yeah, like it's kind of a lost art.
Yeah.
All right, game four last night went Milwaukee's way.
Fantastic.
In a great game. Listen, this wasn't a great game. When I say great game, I don't want you to think that it was like well played. Like both teams shot like 60% from the floor. It wasn't that, but for a starved basketball nation that was wanting a competitive game with a lot of storylines, you couldn't ask for a better fourth quarter. I mean, it was thrilling and electric, and the home crowd and the outside crowd and all of that, and Giannis's huge block, which we'll talk about in a bit. But it was Chris Middleton that stepped up and sort of established himself as the legitimate, you know, number two to Giannis Antetokounmpo on this team, scoring 40 points. I mean, Giannis is so, you know, Giannis has had a two back-to-back games. Before this, in games two and three, he had a 40-plus, 10-plus rebounding effort in both games. One was a loss, one was a 20-point win. And his MVP stock started to rise and whatnot. But Chris Middleton was the guy last night that really was the key for Milwaukee to pull this off. Giannis had a very good game, 26 and 14, I think. But it was Chris Middleton who led the way. But Giannis's block with about 90 seconds to go is one for the ages. It is as good of a block as you'll ever see, if not the best block you'll ever see. And here's the thing. You can make the argument that it might have been the best block in the NBA Finals. And I know LeBron gets a lot of that because he, you know, ran down and made a huge block in the game against the Golden State Warriors. But what Giannis was able to do as Devin Booker is driving, and I've seen this like 10 times already. As Devin Booker is driving, Giannis is making a split-second decision on what he wants to do defensively, right? Booker, remember, scored 42 points in this game. And so Booker's taking a lot of shots. Giannis has to be in position to either defend that, or does he anticipate DeAndre Ayton is at his back, that Booker is going to go for the alley-oop lob? If he fully commits to Devin Booker, he's not able to turn around to get the block. So his mindset is to challenge the shot, but leave enough so that he can go back to get the alley-oop. So when Booker tosses the ball up in the air, Giannis is able to turn on the bad knee and be able to establish him. I know, right? Establish himself enough to put his arm up to make that block on DeAndre Ayton. It's not a single – look, and nothing against LeBron. LeBron's block was fantastic. But when you are charging, there is a single purpose to what you're doing, right? You are moving, and you know what's going to happen, and you get there, and you make the block. Giannis's was, I'm going one way, but in a split second, I'm going to turn and go the other way because I see where this is going, that he's not going to pull up and take a jumper. He sees me coming, so he's going to make the lob pass that's already been established. I already know what's behind me, and I'm going to make that turn and go for the block. It is so brilliant. And I'm telling you, if you haven't seen it in enough angles, watch it from enough angles, from the above cam over the backboard to the different ways you can see this. It was absolutely brilliant.
And watch his face, too, because you can see the wheels turning.
Yep.
That was the other thing. I mean, you can see him like, okay, you know, because like you said, if he overcommits, he's not blocking DeAndre Ayton. He's probably fouling him.
I mean,
he's probably going to go down as a foul, send him to the line because it's in the act of shooting. And you know, I mean, that's the only thing. I mean, that's the only other thing that he could do would have been, ended up becoming a foul. But, I mean, yeah, it was just light feet, moving quickly. I mean, he was going into double team. Looked like it was going to be, yeah, we're both going to jump up and try to block Booker here because we're so close right now. It was, yeah, it was exciting.
Absolutely brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And now we've got a series, right? Now we've got 2-2. Now it's a best 2 of 3.
Best of 3.
It's best 2 of 3. But we haven't seen the home team lose yet. Now, later on in the show, we're going to talk about momentum. Obviously, momentum shifts all the time. It all the time. But now people are starting to speculate that what Mike Budenholzer has now done defensively, there's enough belief that the Milwaukee Bucks have not just got momentum because they've won at home. Everybody who wins at home, you know, the last game you could always say is the team with momentum. But that's not where people are leaning. They're not saying because Milwaukee won the last two games at home, they have momentum. It's not just that. It's the way they've now playing against Phoenix that makes – now it's Monty Williams' turn to figure out some adjustments that he's got to make because the defensive effort that was lacking in game one and in some respects game two, but definitely in game one, where they soft switched and the pick and roll was deadly and they couldn't figure it out. There is a different way they've been playing Chris Paul, and now there might be a real momentum switch that's more than just winning at home, that there is a strategic element to Milwaukee that makes me feel that there is momentum. We'll talk about that coming up in a bit. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. You know what? Fine. We'll do it. If you want to tell us if Die Hard's a Christmas movie or not, why not in July? Because on this date, it was released in 1988, and that's our Throwback Thursday. More into the NBA Finals as we continue on Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony B and Ron Culver.
1988 is our Throwback Thursday. On this date, Bruce Willis's Die Hard hit the theaters. Michael on Twitter has sent us a picture on Twitter of exactly what I was talking about. Those newspaper ads back in the day that you would just open up and you'd be like, you know, big, huge ads for the movies that were coming out. His is awesome. He's got Die Hard. He's got it from 88. Got the Die Hard movie. A fourth smash week special engagement of Die Hard. A Fish Called Wanda, Cocktail, Midnight Run, Young Guns with Emilio Estevez, Kiefer Sutherland, Charlie Sheen. The Blob, Bill Durham, Tucker with Jeff Daniels. Jeff Bridges, I should say, not Jeff Daniels. Jeff Bridges, Coming to America with Eddie Murphy. Man, what a great time!
What a great time to be alive. God, you better have gone to a couple of movies before that because that's a tough decision.
That's right. That was right. Remember just arguing with your friends what movie you wanted to go see?
Yep.
Yeah, it's great. Or you can see if you could sneak into a rated R movie back in the day.
All the time. Yes, that's why I bought tickets to War of the Roses.
Yeah, I did. Right, I went. Yeah, no doubt. Remember when I was a kid, Porky's. Everybody wanted to go see Porky's. Oh,
I was too young. That was too young for me.
Yeah, I was too young for Porky's, but everybody wanted to see it. All right, we're talking about NBA Finals Game 4 last night, and again, a Milwaukee win that's evened up the series at 2 games apiece. Giannis Antetokounmpo with an incredible block, but as I was saying earlier, momentum can switch in a series, not just because you win. right? If you win, obviously you got momentum. You won. Before we get to that, though, have a car problem but don't know where to go? Maybe you're not close to home when your car breaks down. Let O'Reilly Auto Parts help. With O'Reilly Auto Parts Shop Referral Program, take the guesswork out of finding a great shop wherever you are. Call an O'Reilly location near you or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. Click Find a Repair Shop to find a reputable repair facility or service center for your repairs. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. It's not just winning at home. It is what you're doing in the game that makes the other team have to do something. Look, one of the things that has gone on in this postseason has been the remarkable and outstanding play of Chris Paul. It is not just his scoring at times, but it is the way he handles the basketball. And Chris Paul is a guy that is he's a veteran defender. I mean, a veteran point guard. I mean, he's the kind of guy that you would trust, right? He knows how to control the basketball. He knows how to deliver the basketball to the right people, and he knows how to score when it is his time to score. But in these particular finals, he has been sloppy. And in this particular game, in game four, he was really sloppy. He had five turnovers, and that really, really stood out. And the one in particular that is being focused on was his turnover with about a minute left in the game, where if Phoenix gets a bucket, they take a lead. If they get a three, they take control. And instead, it became a three on one the other way with the one guy, Devin Booker, in defense, who had five fouls and at that time had probably eight, but many of them weren't called. And he wasn't going to do anything. Milwaukee gets the bucket, and then they take control of the game. But Phoenix had an opportunity to tie or take the lead on that possession. And what happened? Drew Holiday came over, challenged Paul like he's been doing most of the series. Paul tried to go crossover, tried to dribble between his legs. And then what did he do? As he was penetrating, he slipped. He lost control of the ball, and he slipped. And it turned into a three-on-one the other way. That has been eye-popping. Now, if you follow these kind of things, and I have been, watch where the MVP betting lines are starting to go towards. Chris Paul was the heavy favorite after the first game, heavy favorite after the second game, but now it's Giannis. Giannis is now the betting favorite to win the MVP. Now, Paul is still the second best favorite, but if he continues to turn the ball over and Milwaukee continues to grow, you know, obviously win the series, he's not going to win the MVP if he don't win the series. But five turnovers for a guy that had very few in the postseason, had very few against Denver, very few against the Clippers. He's got enough already in this game because Mike Budenholzer and the Bucks have been guarding him differently. Remember the explosion that he had in game one where he basically took over the game? He's been sort of nullified defensively. Those same things where he has not been challenged have changed. Right? Milwaukee is challenging him with some of their better defenders. And Drew Holiday is one of them. But it's not just Drew Holiday, because when they move Drew Holiday over to Devin Booker, he has gotten looks from Chris Middleton has come over, PJ Tucker has come over, Giannis will even challenge him as he comes into the paint. So there's enough defensive help by Milwaukee to sort of plague Paul. Five turnovers is a lot for a guy like who hardly has any, but that one in particular was very critical, because at that point, Phoenix could have taken control of the game. And instead, it becomes an easy bucket the other way. Now, one other aspect, as I was mentioning before, this outcome, a 109-103 victory by Milwaukee, I guarantee you this morning, as employees and officials start walking into the NBA office this morning, are all going to be saying, thank God we dodged a bullet. Because if Phoenix had won that game last night, this entire show and shows like it across the country and newspaper articles and online blogs and what television commentary would all be talking about the blown non-call by the officials on Devin Booker, who gave up and fouled on purpose and yet did not get his sixth foul call. He wrapped his arms around, I think it was Holiday at the time.
Yeah.
Wrapped his arms around him. Essentially saying, all right, I'm out, but this is the best way I'm going to stop this play.
If Giannis
and the officials went, nah.
If Giannis doesn't follow that shot up, does he get the call like an after call? Like you see it in soccer all the time.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a really good question.
A lot of times soccer, you know, officials now, what they'll do is they'll let it play on, and then we'll go, you know, if they see that, okay, you know, the that team has lost momentum, then they'll call the foul. I'm like, no, that was a foul. You know, I was giving you a chance to see if you guys can make something out of this. It didn't happen. I was just wondering, too. Like, I mean, because Giannis was right there. The ball fell right into his hands. Easy bucket for him. But, you know, NBA usually calls the foul right away. I was shocked that they called that one.
Me too. And you know what? We see this a lot of times in sports, especially if you're a neutral observer of sports, right? If you know, it's not your team.
You have a skin
in the game. But when you watch a game like that, I'm sitting there going, Milwaukee's got to win this game now. Like, this can't happen in the NBA. The NBA cannot go through this. It has been a rough, rough ride over the past year and a half, 2 years for this league. For this finals to be marred, this would have been a critical, critical decision. I'm not kidding when I tell you this. Phoenix pulls this off, especially if Booker gets like one of the key shots at the end of the game, right? This occurred at 3:41 on the clock. That's close to 4 minutes that Devin Booker was allowed to stay on the court with five fouls, right? Until they would call the sixth one, if they would have called it. He should have been out of the game at the 3:41 mark of the fourth quarter. He should have been out of the game. He was their leading scorer. But if the Suns had pulled this off and Booker was instrumental in that from the 3:41 on forward, the NBA is never going to recover from this final. This finals would be marred by this because it's a 3-1 series lead now. That is a commanding 3-1 series lead with game five at home. And for the officials to keep quiet with their whistle on an absolute wide open foul. I mean, it's as if the guy said, there's nothing I can do. I'm gonna stop this guy, and I'm going to get the foul, and I'm out of the game, but it's the only thing I can do. And he must have been like, oh, wow, look.
I know, I can get away with anything.
I might as well just foul all night.
I mean, honestly, that would have been a foul in the 80s. And right. they mugged people back in the 80s.
I saw on Twitter, I wish I could give credit to it. I wish I could find it. Somebody put that, I think it was J.A. Donde, so I think I'm going to lean towards that because I think it was put.
Why not?
He said, Devin Booker is the first guy in the NBA Finals history to have 42 points and 8 fouls.
Yes.
And I thought that was brilliant.
Almost a double-double there,
right,
Booker.
Almost a double-double. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
The other one, too, I think it was like a minute and a half left in the game, or maybe just even a minute left in the game. He sat down, remember? They had that whole thing where, okay, did they do an illegal substitution and going back and forth?
Yes.
He knew he fouled out. So he sat down, and they called it on the other guy, and he's like, oh, okay, I'll go back
on
the floor.
Why not?
But I did love, I think it might have been Jeff Van Gundy. I don't know who the commentator was when they showed the refs talking to Budenholzer. And they're like, hey, man, you're going to win the game. Just let it go.
We got this.
It's like 10 really seconds left. Phoenix isn't coming back.
But imagine you're in the NBA office, right? Like, guys like us, we're watching, but the average fan is like, all right, NBA, you got me back a little bit. All right, yeah, got some stars here. Got two new cities in here.
We're discovering new stars.
Middleton's
becoming starting to become a household name, I think. I mean, outside of Milwaukee, you heard of him, but did you really hear of him?
No, because he was drafted by Detroit, didn't really work out there, found new life in Milwaukee, and really is starting to come around. But you're totally right. Didn't come out of college with big, huge fanfare, right? Didn't explode on the scene the moment he got to the NBA.
And he looked fantastic.
Looked great.
Anytime you put the ball in his hand, you just said, that's money. That's in.
So you get these fans that are going, okay, listen, NBA, fine. I wasn't in on the bubble thing, and I'm tired of LeBron, and I'm tired of all the other stuff that you're doing. Okay, but I'm in. And then you give him that where you go, where a guy goes, what? What do you mean? He gets to stay in the game after that. What are you talking about? I'm out. If you're just going to do that blatantly, I'm out. That's what you worry about when you're in the NBA.
Yep.
You worry about your integrity challenged. That was such a terrible no call. A terrible no call that could have swayed fan opinion on what you're trying to build.
Well, it kind of did.
In these finals.
Fans in the buildings were nailing the chant right.
Right? That's right.
Refs, you blink.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So glad Milwaukee won from that standpoint, because if it had gone the other way, we would be talking about something totally different in a much larger story and much larger context. Coming up, we'll give you an update on what's going on overseas at the British Open or the Open Championship, however you wanted to dice it up. It looks like some scoring is happening very early in round one. It probably won't continue, but while it is, we'll tell you about it as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4. Come on, baby, say you love me. 5, 6, 7 times.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
1988 on a Throwback Thursday, Die Hard made its movie debut. Box office debut. Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine.
Oh, you know it.
For this morning. That's awesome. Very good. So we're taking your thoughts on 1980s movies. And you know, this one in particular, Die Hard, which is something, you know, I still watch every now and then when it's on.
Every Christmas.
Every Christmas, right? With Christmas Vacation and Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Yes.
By the way, Hallmark Channel, which my wife loves, is doing a bunch of Christmas movies because it's Christmas in July.
Yeah, I was
obviously
wondering, did she go on vacation from you?
Yeah, she did. She loves, I mean, those movies are all the same, and she loves every single one of them.
Exact same movie.
Same script and everything, like just changing the different formula. It all works the same.
Think about it. What a great racket, right? Write one script, just change the actors, the settings. Sometimes snow, sometimes not. Doesn't matter.
I've asked this question many times to her, and she just kind of rolls her eyes at me. And I'm like, how many monarchies are still looking for an American princess?
All of them.
Apparently every one of them.
All of them are.
Apparently every single one of these make-believe monarchies has a son that just can't find love in his own country.
No.
He has to go find the working girl in the U.S. and make her a queen.
That's right.
Right? That's the way it is.
So
it's the way it is. All of them are exactly the same.
Yeah.
Goodness.
And there's always some sort of controversy.
Yeah, exactly.
In the realm, in the monarchy.
And we always have this like a little argument. I'm like, your favorite Christmas movie is a prince finding love in the United States during the holidays from a working girl at a supermarket that serves the checks him out at the cash register. My favorite Christmas movie is a guy trying to rescue his wife from terrorists inside a building in Los Angeles.
Yeah, what's more Christmassy than that?
With a machine gun.
That's
more Christmassy than that.
That's love right there.
Come on.
And
now,
a wife he's kind of on the outs with.
Right. He doesn't care that they're kind of on the out. He's like, that's my wife. I got to go save her. Give me a machine gun. Bare feet walking across glass.
I mean, even though she changed her last name.
That's right.
Which clearly made him mad.
Right. Right.
I mean, mad to the point that he took off his shoes to get comfortable, remember?
Yeah, that's right. Remember that? Yeah, he's great. What a great movie. What a fun movie that was. Die Hard 1988.
And who can forget Al?
Yeah, that's right. I wish I could remember the name of the actor.
Reginald Johnson.
He was in that
Urkel.
Urkel show.
Yeah, Family Matters.
Family Matters, that's right.
I mean, what a great sidekick he was.
He was.
The entire thing.
Talking to him on the radio. Great.
Let's call you Roy.
All right, so the British Open is going on right now at Royal St. George's Golf Club. It's going on right now.
Right
as
now.
As we're speaking, right now.
It's not often you and I get to talk about live sport at our time in the morning?
No. Mackenzie Hughes, currently the leader at 5 under par. Andy Sullivan is done with his round in England. He's shot a 67 along with Justin Harding and Danny Willett, former Masters champion. All three in with a 3 under 67. Jordan Spieth's at 3 under par through 12. He's playing really good golf. So I'm watching this. I got this on in my little studio right here. I'm watching it. The course doesn't look all that tough if you hit the fairway.
Yeah.
You don't hit the fairway.
Bryson.
They don't seem to take care of the grounds very well. Like, it's Bryson DeChambeau is in stuff to his waist. It's like, there's Bryson's upper torso. The heather is up to his waist, and he's trying to hit the golf ball out of
that
stuff.
Must be great to be a groundskeeper there.
Yeah.
Because all you got to do is like, yeah, I know. You just got to pay attention to this little strip of green grass.
That's right.
Don't worry about the edges. Let it grow.
Let it grow out. What are we doing?
We're not doing anything here.
No.
Let nature take care of that.
The ball goes in there. Let it be their problem, not ours. We give you plenty of fairway to hit it. And just I before the show today, I heard Nick Faldo say this because, Faldo's a good broadcaster, but he's getting a little frustrated with Bryson because he's like, if you just hit the fairway, you'd win this thing. Like, you don't have to blast these things 370 yards into the Fix stuff every time you're on the tee.
Trying to carry this bunker. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Just hit the fairway. You talented golfer, you don't need to bomb it on every single hole.
Yeah, where's
you
the science?
You're going to end up, like, you can't win the British Open even with a wedge in your hand hitting it from that stuff. That stuff is nasty. It doesn't work. It has no spin coming out. Everything's red hot. By the way, the bunkers, they don't mess around over there. Those things are holes in the ground that you get lost in. You might as well hit, you could hit oil in those things. Like, there are shots where you can't see the golfer.
I'm wondering if they're leftover trenches.
Right.
From the many wars or battles they had back in the day. Maybe an archer hit in one of those holes, and they just said, let's just build a golf course around these.
I was telling you before the show, I was like, how did the old-timey golfers get out of those pot bunkers? Like, how did Bobby Jones get out of that? Well, he probably was never in one. But, I mean, like, if you're a golfer before the sand wedge and 64-degree wedge was invented, like, right now, all these golfers carry these 63, 64-degree wedges. They're just massively open-faced things that will loft the ball straight up in the air. But back in the day, they didn't have that. You had to bring out your little niblick, kind of chop your way out of it.
How'd you get out of it? The only way I can imagine is because there's no TV cameras then. You just picked up the ball and you threw it.
Put me down
for a three.
You went in there and you took a handful of sand and a handful in the golf ball, and then you swung the club and you tossed it. You're like, look what I just did.
Yeah. Magnificent. Because some of these bunkers, you got to go backwards to get out.
Yeah.
There's no way you're going forward. It's almost like you're in a cave.
John Rahm was in the bunker, and he hit the ball, and it hit the wall, and it bounced closer to the wall than he was originally going to hit it from. And that must just make you want to cry.
Yeah.
Like, because here's the thing. Even if you're the best golfer in the world, you know that you could take 7 shots to get out of that thing if the conditions were right. Like, if you know that I could be in here for a while, and I got to count every one of them. So I can't just... I have to keep hitting it until I'm out. And so they're just huge holes.
And not only that, but they also look a little wet.
Yeah.
So, you're not hitting on dry sand either. When you swing that club, you're picking up a lot of sand. You're picking up clumps of sand.
So if you were an English kid, Scottish kid, Irish kid, and you grow up on these courses where the holes are like 5 feet deep, and then you get to the U.S. and they're like, oh no, we just have a sand, like, in fact, you should be able to hit it in the hole from the sand.
Yeah.
Like, it's open. We're not going to try to keep you in the bunker. No, it's just a little dirt. You hit it out of there. In fact, if you want to spin it, if you want to hit it close, feel free. Knock it in. Feel free. They must have gone crazy.
No, because these bunkers, they have the shape of the cup.
Right.
And just gigantic. It's like they have, when you make that cup hole. They have that little tool that they use. They just kind of spin it around, picks up the ground. It looks like they're using the same type of thing. They probably bring in an excavator to do the same exact thing and just fill it with sand.
They're almost
perfectly round.
They're not trying to hole out from these bunkers. They're just trying to get out of these bunkers. So I was in Las Vegas a couple of years ago, and there's a golf course out there called Royal. Oh God, I wish I could remember. It's like Royal something. It's a replica Royal Links. It's one of those courses that replicates holes. They're like, we've got the design and we're designing these holes. So every single hole on this golf course was a replica of a famous British Open hole. So when you would get to the first tee, they would say, this is the 7th at Prestwick that hosted the British Open from 1872 to 1965. And this is hole 7, you know, whatever it is. And they have like the 18th at, oh no, they have like the 17th at St. Andrews. They have a number of different holes that are very famous on the British Open Road. One of them is the postage stamp green at Troon. And if you play there, it's a short par 3, but because it's Las Vegas, like, we didn't, you know, it's not the same kind of wind, you know, it's not 30 mile an hour winds, but they have a pot bunker that is just deep. And the caddy that I had said, everybody wants a picture taken. So if you want your picture taken, and I had my picture taken in the bunker, and it's amazing. It's like you're just buried in this bunker. But it does make you go, I would never get out of this. If I was in the British Open, somehow they just handed me an invite and I landed in that bunker, I would walk off the golf course. I'd say, look, I'm never getting out of this. There's no way I'm getting out of this. If I picked it up and threw it out, what's the penalty? Because that's the only way I'm getting out of this thing. Like, I don't know how they do it, those guys. It's crazy. So that's the British Open leaderboard update.
Are you allowed to take a drop out of a bunker?
I don't know. That's a good question. Like, can I? Like, if I just get frustrated, can I just pick up the ball and go, look, I'm going to pick this up. Five-stroke penalty? Whatever it is. I don't care. I'm not hitting. I'm not going to spend all day chopping at this thing to hit the side of this huge sand wall that is just going to prevent me from getting out. So if you don't mind, I'm going to throw it out. Penalize me, whatever. If I'm hitting my 21st shot, it's better than being there all day holding up play. So I'm not going to do it. So that's the British Open update from Royal St. George's. Should be a good, fun weekend. If this wind doesn't pick up, the winning score is going to be like 19 under par.
Yeah, I mean, if the weather stays favorable like this, I mean, it's probably nice and cool.
Yeah, nice and it's not a nice breeze, but it's not blistering, you know, it's not tearing up the flagpole.
No. I mean, you've seen it before where the flag is just wobbling all over the place.
Listen, I remember when I was a kid, I'd watch the British Open, and guys were in winter hats and gloves in July.
Jackets and
freezing cold. And I'm always like, wow, that's crazy. Where are they playing? The North Pole? I was in New Hampshire, and it'd be 90 degrees outside in New Hampshire, the upper part of the Northeast. And I watched the British Open going, why is it freezing there? Why are those guys wearing coats? Seriously, mittens. They would be wearing mittens to keep their hands warm during the British Open. And then when you get rain, that freezing rain, drive you crazy. Crazy. All right, it's Throwback Thursday. Again, 1988 Die Hard is the premiere on this day. A lot of fun with that today. But coming up next, another 80s movie that I saw this weekend. That's just another masterpiece. I'll tell you about it next on Wake Up Call.
The Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. Coming up next hour, Good, the Bad, and the Dumb. Mike Tannier will join us. We'll talk some NFL. This is Throwback Thursday. Die Hard made its box office debut on this date in 1988. Tuesday, it was raining, hanging out. Looking through movies to watch, HBO had Beverly Hills Cop on.
Yes.
I watched it from start to finish. I've been doing this trend now where I'm watching movies from start to finish now. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to watch that from start to finish. Brilliant movie again. I loved it when it came out. I don't see enough of it. I watched it again. It's as funny today as it was in 1984 when it was released. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Now, it is so 80s. It's insane. In all the movies of the 80s, there was always like the soundtrack was really good and different types of montages. This didn't really have a montage, but it had a really good soundtrack. And Eddie Murphy was just hysterical.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Hysterical.
I will give it up to Bronson Pinchot, too.
Oh, wonderful. A Surge?
Yeah.
I gave it to a collector the other day. Get it! You want the espresso? I make a lemon twist. It was so funny.
Just a small character stealing a movie.
What made this movie great, and it was just rewatching it. You know what's cool about watching these movies, and I'll tell you, is knowing how everybody sort of ended up, right? Like you know Eddie Murphy. Like Eddie Murphy was becoming a superstar then. He's still a superstar today, but
yeah.
Just watching him as a young man play this movie role, knowing this movie was a big hit. But he played the combination of brilliant cop, yet funny, and being able to get his way through situations, right? Like when he goes into the club to talk to Victor, and he tells the guy what to tell Victor, and the guy goes, "Go tell him yourself." Like just off the cuff stuff like that is hysterical. But he plays a brilliant detective. He's a detective that's really smart and really good and knows he's following the clues as to who killed his friend. And I didn't know this, but the guy who kills Mikey in the beginning of the movie and is kind of Victor Maitland's thug is Jonathan Banks, who was the guy in Breaking Bad and now in Better Call Saul, Mike. I was like, whoa, that's cool.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
See a younger version of him playing kind of the thug. But it's such an 80s movie. And it's such an 80s movie. I think Damon Wayans is in it as the guy who runs the buffet at the hotel. And he gives him the bananas.
But the way he gives them the bananas.
The way he gives them the bananas. $12.50, you get peaches, plums, bananas. Because I just want a couple bananas. He gives them the bananas. Goes, shh, don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
He goes out. And I had to explain this to my son because I mentioned one time a while back, I'm not falling for the no banana in the tailpipe. And he said, what is that? And I had to explain to him the movie. I said, I just saw the movie the other day, Banana in the Tailpipe. You didn't see the movie. You don't understand what I'm talking about. It's great. It's so – it's a great. But it's like any other movie. It's like from that time, it wasn't 2.5 hours long, right? I mean, those movies weren't forever. They just – it was like an hour and a half. Good movie. Little shootout scene at the end where bullets are flying everywhere. And then that's it. Resolution. Boom. Done. Apparently, Gil Hill is his boss in this movie, Inspector Todd. And Gil Hill was a real-life Detroit politician slash public figure.
Was he?
And they used him in the movie. He was a real-life – I think he worked in the police department or whatever. He ran for mayor.
He was perfect
in that movie.
He just felt
shooing
like –
out Axel Foley every chance he got.
He just felt like he was getting fired.
That's
any
right.
Second.
Any second.
That's fantastic. That kind of reminds me of that staff sergeant. Emery.
Yes.
Emery something. I mean, because, you know, he was a real Marine sergeant and, you know, ad-libbed everything in Full Metal Jacket, create a career out of it.
So, hey, another movie review from Tony D. Go watch Beverly Hills Cop again.
Don't fall for the banana in the tailpipe.
At all. All right, it's Wake Up Call. Coming up, Good, the Bad, and the Dumb. We'll talk some NFL with Mike Tannier as we continue on Sports Map Radio.